This is The Drive with Josh Graham Podcast. Tune into The Drive weekday afternoons, 3 to 7 on Sports Hub Triad.
Happy draft day to you and yours. I think tonight's going to feel like a throwback because I believe Dave Gettleman is going to decide who the Panthers take in the first round. If he takes Simmons, Carolina will happily settle for Derek Brown at number 7. If he goes Hog Molly instead, the Panthers, they're going to race, I don't know, to unmute their Zoom chat to take the Clemson Tiger. Fun fact for you. In the 25-year history of the franchise, Carolina has never selected a Tiger in the first round. A Clemson Tiger. I think that streak ends tonight, and I'll go a step further. Isaiah Simmons, he's the best-case scenario for the Panthers tonight. I put it out on a poll earlier today at Josh Graham Radio, trying to get a feel from Panthers fans what they want at number 7, what they view to be the dream scenario, and I listed Brown, Simmons, Tua, and an other category. About 100 votes on this. 40% say Simmons, and that is the front runner there. Second would be Tua, then other, then Derek Brown. So it seems like most people agree with me here. Here's my philosophy. When you're drafting in the top 10, you pick best player available. The only exception to that rule is when you need a quarterback. Carolina, they needed a quarterback in 2011. They had the number 1 pick. They picked Cam Newton. He wasn't the best player available that year. I mean, you could go down the list at some of the guys who were there, just studs. And Cam, he turned out great for Carolina. It was the right pick. But with the exception of quarterback, you do not reach in the top 10. Carolina does not need a quarterback. I think Marty Herney understands this. Look at the picks he's made as Panthers GM when he's in the top 10. He's made 4 top 10 picks. Those players. Julius Peppers, Jordan Gross, Cam Newton, Luke Kuechly. I'd say that's a pretty good batting average. Kuechly, by the way, I think is a telling pick because it's just like the scenario Carolina's in right now. A lot of people on social media, they believe Carolina wants Brown because they saw a photo of Herney at the Auburn Pro Day just gazing lovingly into the eyes of this hulking defensive lineman. It seemed like a love affair. Find someone who looks at you the way that Herney was looking at Brown in that image. But do you know what I remember? Circa 2012, Herney was at the Tar Heel Pro Day, watching a defensive lineman by the name of Quentin Copels. He was the guy who was going to stuff the run. Top 15 pick, Carolina. Hey, this guy might be the next Julius Peppers coming from the Tar Heel football program. Carolina has a big need on the defensive line. Julius Peppers isn't here anymore. They hadn't drafted Star Latulale at that point. Surely Carolina's not going to go linebacker when they already have TD and John Beeson. That wouldn't make much sense, would it? At number 9, they select Boston College middle linebacker Luke Kuechly. There's no question that was the right pick. They went best player available over drafting need. Isaiah Simmons, he is the perfect fit for Matt Rhule as well. So I think if Rhule had his choice, he'd probably say, I want Simmons. I think Herney understands you need to go best player available. And in terms of players I know to be better than Simmons in this draft, I think it's a short list. I think it's Burrow because he's just so solid in the position that he plays. It's Chase Young. And maybe it's Jeff Okuda. Maybe. I think that's razor thin, the margin between the Ohio State corner and Simmons. Simmons is a perfect fit for Rhule because he fills multiple voids. He said it himself yesterday. If you're drafting me, you're drafting a guy who's essentially playing 3 different positions for you. You're drafting 3 players. Rhule's all about versatility. I'm a little biased because I've seen Simmons in person. I've seen how dominant he can be. I stood next to him on the sideline. This guy, he's a freak. I'm not going to say physical specimen because that would be something you could hear tonight to check off of the NFL draft bingo board I put together. But the player that most fits the category physical freak, it's Simmons. I haven't seen anybody like that in person my career covering football since Jadeveon Clowney. The guy's a monster. And he can rush the passer, a need for Carolina. He could cover passes as a linebacker, which is something Carolina needs because Luke Kuechly is one of the best we've ever seen do it at that position. He just retired. They need Simmons. You can plug him in right now, and he's guaranteed to be something. It's not going to be a bust. Lastly, we've seen this movie before, haven't we? I'm not just talking about what happened with Kuechly in 2012. The Panthers, they had a top 15 pick in 2005, and it turned out to be Thomas Davis. Remember, when Herney drafted Davis, he was a safety. He was one of those tweeners. Is he going to be a linebacker in the NFL because he's not fast enough to play safety? Or is he going to grow into that spot, cut some weight? Of course, he ended up playing outside linebacker. He did so beautifully. He's going to be a future Hall of Honor inductee. He's one of the greatest ambassadors ever in Panthers football. We love TD. So I think Herney has seen enough to know Simmons is the right guy. He's the best case scenario for Carolina. You could tweet the show at SportsHubTriad. 336-777-1600 is the phone number. It is a little concerning to see a national writer I respect a lot, Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, senior NFL writer, tweet this out earlier today. The tweet: Panthers are a little bit of a mystery inside the top seven. I doubt anyone is 100% certain who is making the pick or how the new regime is finding a consensus, so there's been a lot of unknowns. The organization and how it's operated since the end of the season has been confusing. That brings up this question that I want to ask Joe Person, who's as close as anybody is in the media, has been in the media for the last decade, beat writer for The Athletic. He's joining us at 5:30. If there are conflicting voices on that conference call tonight, whose voice weighs heaviest? I don't think Tepper is going to be the guy to say, I want this person. It's really Rule or Herney. Whose voice is going to be louder and carry the most weight? While I've spent all this time talking about Herney, and I believe he's going to see Simmons to be the right pick, I think the most important person in that room is Matt Rule. That's why I made sure to talk about him being the perfect fit, the best fit out of anybody for Carolina, fitting what Rule wants to do. Matt Rule, he's going to have the final say because he's the one that has the most job security. I don't care if you're talking about football or any business in life. The person who has the most power is going to have the final word. And usually, it's the one that's been given the most assurance by the one at the top, whoever's sitting at the very top. Matt Rule was just given a 7-year contract. Direct commitment from David Tepper. Meanwhile, Herney, he only has 1 year left on his deal. He's a general manager that wasn't hired by Tepper. He's been a carryover. Kept him around. We didn't know if he was going to be the second in command to a football COO the day that Rivera was let go, but it turns out through the draft, Tepper has really valued Herney's opinion on college evaluations. But all we've heard all along, everybody is on the same wavelength when it comes to evaluation. Reporting is saying otherwise. So if it comes down to Rule wants one guy, Herney wants another, I think Rule's going to win out because he's been given more assurances and more commitment from Tepper. Rule, He also has a better read on this class, I think, of college players than Herney does. He coached some of them. He's faced many of them. He's recruited even more of them. Joe Brady, who's on his staff, he coached many of these LSU guys, faced a lot of the SEC. Ton of SEC guys expected to go in the first round. Derrick Brown, he upended LSU quite a bit last year. Very good game that was played. Of course, faced Alabama, saw Tua, saw Jerry Jeudy, saw Henry Ruggs, saw Jedrick Wills. I think the coaching staff's going to be leaned on here. Cliff Kingsbury had a great draft last year because he came from college to the NFL. He had a better understanding, more contacts in the college game. I'd be stunned for that reason if it is a quarterback taken by Carolina. I don't care if Tua or Herbert falls. If either of them did, I think that's the best case scenario for Carolina to trade back. It's funny, when people say they want to trade back in the draft, they're always thinking that there's a team that wants to give up something in order to get to their spot. Usually when that happens, there's a very valuable commodity that's available. I think Carolina has already given commitment from the coaching staff to Teddy Bridgewater. So if Tua or Herbert fell to number 7, I don't think Carolina would draft them. I think that's the situation they'd trade back. Trade back to the New England Patriots spot. Trade back to the Las Vegas Raiders spot. Trade back to the Jaguars spot. You name it. I think that is the scenario Carolina says, we are going to trade back. Because that's where you actually get the value. Who else would be there that Carolina would not want to draft themselves, but other teams would want to trade up in order to take? Maybe Jeff Okuda? If Carolina doesn't go corner, which they need, by the way, maybe they could trade back in that spot, albeit I don't see it. I think there's only 4 players, make it 3 players, I could see Carolina taking at number 7 tonight. 3. I think it's Simmons, I think it's Brown, and I think it's Okuda. I think those are the only 3 players I could see Carolina taking at number 7. Nobody else. But I will give you my full prediction for the top 10 in tonight's draft. It's our smock draft that's going to come up in about 15 minutes. However, and wherever you were listening, we appreciate that. You could tweet the show at SportsHubTriad, 336-777-1600, the phone number. Robert Walsh, he's producing today's show. Aaron Gabriel, he's in the control room as well. Got my NFL draft bingo board I mentioned a short while ago. And if you want to play along, you can find it on my social media at Josh Graham Radio. It's also on Sports Hub Triad. We got many different versions of this. So if you want to play along at home, you got everything from Grindr on this to Trevor Lawrence, a draft pick crying, bandwidth being mentioned on the air, Henry Ruggs 40 time. If there's a Mahomes love comparison, Kuiper just saying, here's a guy, pad level, high motor, Isaiah Simmons, someone saying he's 3 players in 1. Cam Newton, hip surgery. Goodell getting booed. A Falcons making a trade. 49ers making a trade. Joe Brady, Trent Dilfer. A Wonderlic score being mentioned. Deceptively fast being mentioned. Burrow's days at Ohio State. A pet appearing on screen. Hacking being mentioned. High ceiling, intangibles, deep wide receiver draft. Those are the bingo board submissions here. Even though I like this text, football IQ should definitely be on the bingo board. Hey, I don't want to make this too easy now. Like, we're not naming any specific prospects there. Like, it would be the easiest draft board ever if I made it Burrow, Chase Young, Jeff Okuda. I think we all know that that draft board would get filled up a lot easier, or that bingo board will.
We're now the opposite of the front of sports talk because we're back to it. Get it?
Well, that's not funny.
Back to the drive.
That's moronic.
With Josh Graham.
Salute. since we mostly cover the Carolina Panthers, we are not doing a mock draft, but instead, we're doing a smock draft. Not picking the full 32. There are just going to be too many trades, too much madness to try and project 32 picks. Plus, that would take too much time, if I'm being honest. So I'll go through the top 10, what I think's going to happen, trades included, the first 10 picks tonight, and then after that, we're going to chat with Joe Person, Panthers beat writer for a long time with The Athletic. He's going to join us at 5:30.
Since everybody seems to have a
smock
draft nowadays.
With the first pick,
second pick,
third pick,
fourth pick.
Start with the quarterback.
Josh Graham wants a part of the action.
I was replaced by a zoo animal.
Josh predicts the top 10 picks of the 2020 NFL draft.
The pick is in. Here we go.
The Cincinnati Bengals are now on the clock.
Do we have the draft noise fired up, ready to go here? I love that sound. The Cincinnati Bengals are going to take Joe Burrow. Yesterday, reports came out that they already told Burrow he's going to be the number one pick. Cincinnati apparently has rebuffed that because they said they want whoever their number one pick, whoever they are going to pick there, to have their moment where he receives the phone call and gets to accept being a Cincinnati Bengal number one. It's going to be Burrow. He is the safest pick at quarterback in this draft, and he's an Ohio kid. Number two, the Washington Redskins. Chase Young, best overall player in this draft. Ron Rivera, defensive coach. He loves his D linemen. Number three, we got a trade. It's going to be the Miami Dolphins trading from number five to number three. There are a lot of conflicting headlines out there, a lot of misinformation that's not new to this draft. Miami, here's what we know. They need a quarterback. They've already flirted publicly with the idea of trading to number three. They are the team with the most picks to try and move around to ensure they get what they want. They're going to move there regardless, and I think they're going to take Justin Herbert. I think it's going to be a mistake. That's not new with the Miami Dolphins. They did it with Drew Brees, passing on him in 2006 in favor of Dante Culpepper. History is going to be relived for Miami. They're not going to take a chance on Tua. They're going to go Justin Herbert, number three. Number four pick. The New York Giants trying their damnedest to trade out of this spot to convince Miami or the Chargers they're the better team to trade up for. Maybe they're fielding calls from Atlanta, but I don't know if the Giants want to trade that far back. I think at the end they're not going to find a trade partner, and they're just going to go with a hog molly. Dave Gettleman loves his guys in the trenches. Tristan Wirfs is the best offensive lineman available, and it addresses the Giants up front. It protects the investment they made last year, picking Daniel Jones number six. They got to protect him. So Tristan Wirfs, first lineman off the board at number four. Number five, it is the Detroit Lions. They go ahead and take Jeff Okuda. He is outside of Burrow, outside of Chase Young, probably the third safest player available, third best overall, right there with Isaiah Simmons. The Lions, and then in the end, they need to pick up a corner, and Okuda, he's a sure thing. So I think they go with the corner over a D lineman. Number six, it's the LA Chargers. Tua finds his home. And I think Tua, he's probably not going to be ready to play this year. Off-season programs, they're canceled. You can't really get to know your offensive coordinator, your wide receivers. OTA is very valuable to rookies. Tua also coming back from the injury. You don't want to rush it. I think the coaches are honest when they say Tyrod Taylor is the guy right now. They're grooming a young quarterback the same way Cleveland groomed Baker Mayfield, where it was Taylor initially, and then Baker came on after the fact. Tua, it just makes too much sense. They picked up Trey Turner in the trade with Russell Okun, shored up right guard, and then picked up Brian Bulaga, the Packers' right tackle. Why would they leave left tackle as something unaddressed versus shoring up the right side of the line? Maybe it's because they have a left-handed quarterback, and that is the blind side for a left-hander. Tua to the Chargers, it makes too much sense, or Tua much sense, to go with him at number six. Yeah, I really deserve that there. LA, you need to have stars, because right now you're not even the second most popular team in Los Angeles. It's the Rams, it's USC football, and then it's the LA Chargers. Maybe that changes if Tua's there. The Carolina Panthers, they are now on the clock, and the pick's going to be Isaiah Simmons. I think Matt Rhule and I think Marty Herney, they can be in agreement on this. My philosophy is this. When you're drafting in the top 10, you go best player available. Simmons is that. He's the perfect fit for Matt Rhule's defense. We've seen this movie before with Thomas Davis. Played safety out of Georgia. Ended up being an outside linebacker. And he's going to be inducted into the Panthers Hall of Honor one day. He will be the first Clemson Tiger in Panthers history to go in the first round. I think Simmons is the guy for Carolina. Number eight. It's the Arizona Cardinals. Derek Brown is still on the board in this circumstance, but I think they protect Kyler Murray. I think they go with an offensive tackle. Andrew Thomas, he's my favorite tackle in this draft. I think Wirfs is probably the most talented, the most athletic. Thomas, he's a four-year starter in the SEC. Started as a freshman. I think they protect Murray, who needs time to throw to Fitzgerald and DeAndre Hopkins. They go offense, they go Thomas, number eight. Number nine, it's the Jacksonville Jaguars. Will they trade out of this spot? I don't think so, since they have another first-round pick a little bit later on. I think they go CeeDee Lamb. Lamb's my favorite player at wide receiver. I love this guy. Best wide receiver who's come out since, I'd say, Julio Jones. He's complete. He could do a lot of things. Also, I think the Jags' recent history drafting a Lincoln Riley wide receiver from Oklahoma paid off. D.D. Westbrook, pretty good year last year for Jacksonville. They go with CeeDee Lamb. And the last pick in my smock draft, number 10, it is the Cleveland Browns on the clock. They go Jedrick Wills. One of the few changes I have in my top 10 here is that Mekhi Becton falls outside the top 10, and that's for a couple of reasons. You got to appease an owner when you make a pick, and while maybe the teams knew about his negative drug test during the combine, I think that's something that just came to the attention of many fans, to the owners. I think that hurts him a bit. Also, there's some reports out there about his knees as well not being great. When there's a very small margin between the tackles, that can really knock you back. So I think they go with the Alabama right tackle, Jedrick Wills. He has this big build, and they're going to protect Baker Mayfield up front. Those are my top 10 picks in my smock draft. We'll talk to Joe Person, Panthers beat writer from The Athletic, Carolinas, in a little over 5 minutes. For those who don't know, we made a bet about a month ago that if the Panthers stay at number 7 and don't pick Simmons, Brown, or Kinlaw, I will cut my hair into a mullet when it is safe to do so and barbershops and such open back up, and I'll dress like Joe Exotic for a week. I think there's only one player Carolina could draft at 7 to make me do this, and it's Okuda. If that happens, I will happily cut my hair to look like Okuda. I think it would be a good pick. I wouldn't argue with the pick. I wouldn't be that surprised if Carolina went that route. I think it's the only hope. There's an outside chance for Herbert. Remember, Herney, he flew all the way across to Eugene to see him. That matters. I would just be surprised if it happens. If Herbert's there and neither Okuda nor Simmons are on the board, that might be a spot where Carolina drafts back. Or trades back, excuse me. I think the same case for Tua. If there's a quarterback on the board, that's a spot where Carolina wouldn't mind trading back, and you hope that Kinlaw is still available a little bit later on. I think they do the same thing if Derek Brown was available. If Okuda is off the board, if Simmons is off the board, and there is either Tua or Herbert and Derek Brown, I don't think Carolina goes ahead and takes Brown. I think they trade back if they get the offer, even if it means missing out on the Auburn defensive tackle. But these are some of the things I want to discuss with Joe, because he knows the parties better than I do. I cover the Panthers, but Joe covers them a lot closer, and he's been covering the team a lot longer. So I'm interested, Derek Brown, Jeff Okuda, Isaiah Simmons, how do the Panthers rank those three in order in terms of best player available on their big board? Joe will give us his insight next on The Drive.
You could try getting your sports news and talk somewhere else.
My life sucks quite enough already, thank you.
Best to leave it right here on The Drive with Josh Graham.
We're going to be talking to Panthers beat writer Joe Person in just a few minutes. Excited about the NFL draft tonight. In fact, before we get to Joe, I have a couple of bold predictions for later on tonight. I don't do a lot of bold predictions, but I have a few here that I think possibly could happen later on. And I think my smock draft might have given away a few of these here. And it starts with, I think Derek Brown is going to fall outside the top 10 later on. I just don't think if Carolina passes on him at 7, Arizona, I think, is going to want to protect their quarterback. I think the Jags are thinking offense. Cleveland the same way. They're wanting to protect their investment in Baker and give him enough time to utilize these receivers they've paid so much for in Jarvis and Odell. So I think if Carolina passes, which I expect them to, if Simmons or Okuda are available, if Brown drops past Carolina's pick, he's not going to go in the top 10. So that's my first bold prediction. Secondly, I've been trumpeting this one all week long. New England is going to take a quarterback in the first round. They're not going to have enough to take Tua in the top 5. So I think Tua is going to go to the Chargers at number 6. Herbert is a Miami Dolphin in my projection here. But Jordan Love, he strikes me as somebody, if he's put into the right situation, he can have a lot of success. He was great his sophomore season at Utah State. He was surrounded by a really good coaching staff, Matt Wells, and many of those coaches went to Texas Tech after Cliff Kingsbury lost his job in the Big 12. He was replaced by Gary Anderson. It wasn't really as good of a spot. There wasn't as much surrounding Love, and that's why there was a down year, if you will, in the way that he performed. I think Love still has a lot of really good traits, and if they're fostered in the right environment and the right culture, if you will, a la the Patriot system with Josh McDaniels still there as the OC, Bill Belichick, I think that is enough to think Love will have success. I love Tua, I love Burrow, but I think if Love is a Patriot, that's the best quarterback situation regardless of what happens anywhere else. So that's something to keep an eye on there. And also, there's a relationship. New England, they, of course, sent Jimmy Garoppolo to San Francisco a few years back for a second-round pick. Reportedly, Tom Brady was in conversation with San Francisco about going there. So there's always been this weird connection between New England and San Fran. San Fran, no second round, third round, or fourth round picks. So that might be a spot to keep an eye on, New England potentially moving up if they want to go after a quarterback. We're now being joined by Joe Person, my buddy from the Athletic Carolinas. Nobody as close to the Panthers as an independent journalist the last 10 years than Joe. So we're a few hours out from the draft. Rank these three players and how high you believe they are on the Panthers board. Derrick Brown, Jeff Okudah, Isaiah Simmons.
I will go 1A, Okudah, 1B, Brown, 1C, Simmons.
Why Okudah at the very top?
Just the fact that he is, and I know lately people, the last day or so, people have sort of questioned his credentials, but he is a complete corner. He feels to me like the kind of kid you can stick in at that spot previously manned by James Bradbury, and you've got your starting one of your starting corners for the next 5 years that he's on his rookie deal and maybe beyond that. I don't know that it'll be available. That'd be interesting because most of the mocks I've done, he's been gone, and so I haven't even had this discussion much. It's been more Brown versus Simmons, which in and of itself is a hard decision. And you throw Okudah in there, you know, I think if I'm Marty Herney and Matt Rhule, I have to take him.
This is something that's being discussed a lot today. Charles Robinson, he had the tweet, NFL reporter for Yahoo Sports, that there's some confusion who the decision maker in Carolina is. Obviously, David Tepper gets the last call on so many things, but I doubt he's somebody who would overrule someone like Herney or even Matt Rhule if they really wanted somebody in their evaluation. But if Rhule wanted somebody and Herney wanted another, who do you believe does get the final call?
David Tepper, since it's his team and he paid $3 billion for it, or $2.3 billion, whatever it was.
How close do you believe he follows it? Like, how close do you think he's looking at all these prospects?
Probably not to the – I don't think he felt the need. Of course, this was not an issue this year with the quarantine. But, like, for instance, last year, I don't think he felt the need to shake every dude's hand that they were considering in the first round the way Jerry Richardson did. I mean, Richardson was old school that way. Richardson played the game at a high level. Of course, was, you know, won a NFL championship with the Colts. At any rate, but that doesn't mean Tepper's not involved in his own analytical way. And, you know, that's typically who the tiebreaker is. And, you know, you would hope that Matt Rhule and Marty Herney are on the same page. That doesn't come to that. I saw that report by Charles Robinson. You know, that's fine. I've heard some of that from around the league, too. Inside the building, not as much. I don't think it's quite as fractured or confusing or chaotic or whatever as maybe folks like to think. But it's obviously with Matt Rhule's first draft, and it's a GM who was retained from the Ron Rivera regime. Of course, it's a question and a legitimate question. I just think I get the impression that both of them will have a large say in this and seem to be, for the most part, on the same page.
Here's what I think. If David Tepper, if it does come down to him, he's just going to look at the Athletic Carolinas, what Jordan Rodrigue and Joe Person are saying the Panthers should take at 7. That's what I think's happening.
Who said that?
I think David Tepper's doing that. I think he's just looking at it saying, hey,
let me
see what Joe Person and Jordan Rodrigue think. Jordan's going to be with us tomorrow.
If he's smart, listen, Tepper's a bright dude. And, you know, you don't want to be too hands-on because, you know, I forget if I've been on since Jordan and I wrote the story about how he was behind Ron Rivera's move to a 3-4. That's a little too hands-on when you're having the coach and the defensive coordinator change their scheme at your strong suggestion. On draft night, you know, I don't know. Mark Richardson, he was sort of making an appearance in the room. It's funny and timely. I did a story this week on the 2017 draft, which was a lot like what you're describing, Josh. You had Ron Rivera and Mike Shula and others pulling for Christian McCaffrey. The other end of the rope, you had Dave Gettleman and a couple of several other scouts pulling for Leonard Fournette. And I asked someone in researching that story this week, I said, what would have happened if the Jags had not taken Fournette and they're both sitting there at seven? You know, who breaks the tie? And I was told Richardson would have. And by the way, Richardson was in Christian McCaffrey's corner. So, you know, again, I don't know if that'll be the case tonight. But we're going to see Matt Rhule's influence on it. I mean, I don't know that that necessarily means that it's like, oh, he went over Marty Herney's head. You know, I think there have been a lot, you know, 2 months, 3 months of pre-draft discussions to lead to this point.
He's on Twitter at Joseph Person. Read his stuff at The Athletic Carolinas. So a lot of people are talking about Carolina. It might be best suited for them to trade back, but I've always told those people in order to trade back, there has to be somebody available that teams want to trade up for. So when you look at scenarios, Carolina trading back, who's a guy that might be a valuable commodity available? Carolina's willing to pass on, but trades back in favor of a team that so wants to jump up into the seventh spot.
Tua is the guy, and I do think he's going to drop out. Now, does anyone will he drop farther than seven, though? That's the thing. Like, you know, and maybe he doesn't even drop to seven, but if ever there was a guy, it feels like he's it. You know, that it seems like every week we're peeling away another layer of whoa, a wrist surgery, and, you know, wow, this ankle thing was a little more involved than what we thought. Doesn't mean he's not going to be a good player, but it may cause his stock to drop some tonight. That, you know, I think that helps the Panthers tremendously. You know, if a couple of those offensive tackles start flying off the board early, which some predict they could, that would help the Panthers. Because I do think that Matt Rhule wants to trade back. And I think, you know, Marty Herney's on board with that too. I think Marty Herney isn't going to go back and just to go get someone he's not really in love with. So, you know, there's sort of that sweet spot, you know, dropping back maybe three or four spots and not certainly not going any farther back than like 15, because then you're starting, then you're really trading. Yes, you got an extra pick or two coming, but you've potentially traded a big-time impact player in the top 10 for a guy who's like, this guy should be a starter for this year, maybe, maybe not. So it's going to be interesting, but no doubt about it, Rhule with this rebuild, and it makes sense. And I think it's worth pointing this out too, Josh. I don't think this is a big draft where you're going to sit there and say, oh, check the box on a defensive tackle. Check the box on a linebacker. Check the box on a corner. You know, they have a couple positions like corner, for instance, they've got to address. But because Matt Rhule's in the rebuild, he's got a seven-year, you know, the luxury of a seven-year contract, they can say, who are the best players, regardless of position, that we can build this around? Let's go get those guys, and then we'll figure out the rest of it as we go along, because we're probably not looking at being good until like 2022.
Well, let me ask you this. Speaking of the best players who might be available, Joe Person here with us. We put out a poll at Josh Graham Radio on Twitter. Who's the best case scenario for the Panthers at number seven? And 40% of the poll says Isaiah Simmons. Who do you think is the best case, dream scenario for Carolina staying at seven?
Oh, man. I mean, probably, like I said, I'd probably still stick with Okuda, because I just, you know, you talk to scouts and you watch the tape on the kid, and he's just like a complete corner. I mean, I've heard, lately, there's been kind of a buzz around C.J. Henderson. I think he's going to be, and he'll probably go a lot higher than people think, but I don't know. I mean, when I took over this beat way back when, the Panthers still had an Ohio State corner that they had gotten in the first round by the name of Chris Gamble.
Yep.
Chris Gamble was a quiet guy, didn't go to a lot of Pro Bowls, if he went to any Pro Bowls, but he held down the starting corner spot for the Panthers for 9 years and did so at a pretty damn high level. And I just think Okuda is the kind of guy like that. You know, maybe not flashy, but man, he's got the length you want. He's certainly fast enough, and he is a polished cover guy, and he's a hell of a tackler.
And they're both guys who went to Ohio State with single digits numbers, like Gamble was number 7. I mean, I'm not sure if that factors in at all, but just figured I'd throw that in there. Joe, stay safe at home. Continue the great work with The Athletic and enjoy the all-virtual NFL draft later on tonight.
You got it, bud. Appreciate it, Josh. You stay safe as well.
You got it. That's Joe Person on Twitter, at Joseph Person. Kind enough to give us some insight and to terrify me, because that's a lot of Jeff Okuda praise. Oh, goodness. That's the guy. If he falls, that's the guy where I'm in danger. I think Carolina would trade back rather than going quarterback at number 7. I think they would. And I'd be out of this Josh Exotic bet. But Okuda, that's the guy who scares me here. Joe just telling me how good he is. Again, I'm not going to say it's a bad pick. I'm not going to do it. But it's going to be a sad day for me. And I partly feel like it's going to happen now. Because I'm the same dude who said Aaron couldn't recreate the Trey Jones shot. And then here he is, banking it off the front of the iron and recreating it. I had to have Christmas lights on my car for 2 weeks in the month of February.
You're welcome.
It feels like that's going to happen all over again here. I'm nervous. I'm shook. We got Ticket to the House to do in about 10 minutes. So I was mentioning some bold predictions I have for the draft tonight. A few of those I already noted. New England, they're going to take Jordan Love. I think they're going to trade up to number 13 to do so. Derek Brown, he's going to fall outside the top 10 because I think Carolina is going to end up getting Isaiah Simmons. How's this for a take? Let me know if you agree with this one. Jerry Jeudy, he's not going to be the first wide receiver taken off the board. He's not even going to be the second wide receiver taken. I think CeeDee Lamb's going to be a top 10 pick. I think he's the best wide receiver there. And I think in the NFL, or in any sport, people are trying to recreate what the best teams are doing. That's why I think Jordan Love's going to be someone that a team trades up for. He's compared to Pat Mahomes. Well, they're doing it right. And Kansas City, they traded up to get that Mahomes guy. Well, let's try and recreate that. One of the guys he throws to is Tyreek Hill. And Ruggs is a 4-2-7 guy. Played at Alabama. We saw how it looked against guys who were going to be drafted in the NFL. A.J. Terrell, we saw how it looked. Or A.J. Terrell, we saw the way that it looked against Delpit. We saw the way it looked against Christian Fulton. We saw how it looked against Trayvon Diggs. Henry Ruggs, he's somebody I think a team will snag just because of his speed more than they might take Jerry Jeudy. So that's my last bold prediction. Jeudy, not going to be taken first among wide receivers, not going to be taken second. He's going to be the third wide receiver off the board. Yes, Robert.
Oh, I didn't have anything. I agree with you. Oh. I think that could potentially
Aaron
happen.
Got really mad because he's wearing a Chiefs jacket, and I compared two players to Chiefs.
No, I'm not mad. It sounds good in theory, but, you know, the Chiefs perfectly did that whole Pat Mahomes thing.
I'm just telling you, this is how it works.
Right. Agreed.
Right, and culture matters. If Pat Mahomes ended up going to the Houston Texans, or to the Chicago Bears,
it wouldn't have turned out the way it turned out.
I don't think it did. I don't think it would have. You're under Andy Reid, and that stuff matters.
You got Alex Smith there.
Jordan Love, if he's working with Josh McDaniels and Bill Belichick, I buy that. I buy that as something that can work. The Ruggs thing, if you're trying to recreate Tyreek Hill, good luck with that. I'm here to tell you that Jeudy is a better wide receiver than Ruggs, and CeeDee Lamb's better than both of them. I just can't wait to see how it all shakes out, because eventually all these rumors, they get put by the wayside, and then we finally see where these teams go.
You want a fun fact on Ruggs?
Give me a fun fact.
He in his entire college career, he only had 11 catches of a catch going more than 20 yards downfield. That is the... I think there are 13 wide receivers in this draft who have more deep catches than he does.
I think that has a lot more to do with the guys who are next to you.
I would agree with that. I'm just a fun little nugget to share.
It is fun.
Welcome to the show that cloned the Loch Ness Monster and got her drunk.
The Drive with Josh Graham.
We are now sharing with Darren Vaught from USA Baseball on Twitter at Darren Vaught. I'll get to my NFL draft bingo board in about 5 minutes or so. But since it is Thursday, every week we have our Throwback Thursday segment. And since the Boston Red Sox got away scot-free essentially yesterday, I figured we'd do the Imagine Dragons for the Boston Red Sox. But before we do so, very quickly, Darren, what was your biggest takeaway from the punishment handed down on your beloved Red Sox?
Well, I think it's fair to ask questions because comparatively it seems like they got away with a lot more than the Houston Astros did. And it's just, it's very possible. Look, it's totally possible that the extent to which they went with the cheating was so much lesser than the Astros that this is the appropriate punishment. But the questions in play to me are like, you know, Alex Cora was only punished, according to those handed down by Major League Baseball, for his involvement in the Astros cheating scandal. And the brunt of this was put on the video guy, the head video guy for the Red Sox, whereas the guy for the Astros got away with it. So I think it's entirely possible that Major League Baseball, in short, wanted a scapegoat, wanted to set an example, but didn't want this to linger, so they lessened the punishment and will continue to do so for further teams, using the Astros as the, hey, don't mess with us.
All right. Hopefully we have baseball sometime soon in the next month and a half or so. Until then, every Thursday, we will be listing off the Imagine Dragons for many of your favorite teams.
We discovered who the Nickelbacks of Major League Baseball were.
Doug Minkiewicz.
Marcus Giles.
Johnny Estrada.
He might be a top five Nickelback of Major League Baseball.
Look at this photograph.
Now we're looking for the players who embodied the last decade of baseball.
Salt in a sweat?
No, not the best players.
Believer. Believer.
This is the Imagine Dragons of 2010's baseball.
So, yeah, we're looking for the most memorable guys, not necessarily the best. Here are some guys who don't apply, I don't think, Darren. There are a lot of them. Mookie Betts, J.D. Martinez, Ellsbury, Buchholz, Bogarts, Jackie Bradley, Adrian Gonzalez, Chris Sale, Rick Porcello, Dustin Pedroia, David Ortiz, John Lester, John Lackey, Jake Peavy. That's the extent of the list. Do you disagree with any?
Did you say Josh Beckett in there?
Josh Beckett's more of a Nickelback if you wanted to have the designation. I think his time in the 2010s was more with the LA Dodgers than it was the Red Sox, but I could throw him in there anyway.
Sure, yeah. No, I think he's off limits. There's one in there that is maybe the first pitcher on my list that I'm going to contend.
Porcello?
No. I think Clay Buchholz.
Oh,
the description for an Imagine Dragon.
You know what? I'm going to allow it. I will allow that. Julian, big Red Sox fan, writes in Brock Holt.
Of course.
And he included a fun fact. Do you want me to share you the fun fact included?
Absolutely.
Holt is the only player to ever hit for the cycle in a World Series game. He was also the lone all-star in the lost 2015 season for Boston.
Yep, that is accurate. And his name is Brock, so he obviously was the first hitter on my list.
I'll tell you the first name on my list. It's Mr. Jenny Dell, Will Middlebrooks.
Yes.
Third baseman Will Middlebrooks. There's a lot of interesting stories with that. Apparently, she is the one that was once with Nesson, who reported on the team and then dated a player, right?
Yes, that is 100% correct. So,
who do you
again,
got next?
That might as well be a first name of Brock. I've got another one who fits the culture perfectly. Jared Saltalamacchia.
Excellent.
Robert, do you want to take a crack at spelling Jared Satanamakia?
No, but when you were naming players that were disqualified from being Imagine Dragons, it just sounded like you were listing off of fireworks from Joe Dirt there for a little bit. Can you give me some of those names from like
Bogarts, yeah. Ellsbury, Sale, Porcello, yeah. Pedrorski.
I'll take two of those Pedrorskis and one Bogard, please.
I'll throw in a Daniel Nava.
Yes. That's one on my list. That's perfect.
I'm getting a lot of this on social media. A lot of Koji Uehara.
Ooh. You know I stand the Japanese guys often. Too good. Too good to be an Imagine Dragon.
Great closer. Got the final out in the World Series. How about Drew Pomerantz?
Ooh, good one. I like it.
Who's next on your board?
Catcher, Ryan Lavarnway.
Don't know who that is.
Damn. All right. Too obscure.
All right. Okay. I got a pitcher. I got a pitcher I want to throw in here.
Okay. Throw
this might be the best pitcher I have here. Felix DuBrant. All right. I have time for one more here, Darren. Give me the best one you have on your board.
This one will knock your socks off. Guaranteed. Mike Napoli.
Yeah! Someone writes in Johnny Gomes. He's a Nickelback.
Well, he played in the early 2010s. He was lower on my list, but I had it.
Yeah, he's a Nickelback. I remember I was at a game, left field seats at Camden Yards, and somebody was cursing out Gomes, and he gave him the middle finger behind his back, like behind his glove, behind his back, so nobody else could see it. Johnny
nice.
Gomes.
Southern California guy.
Brent tweets in. Matt, do you agree with either of these two from Brent on Twitter? Matt Albers or Quentin Berry?
Too obscure. Both too obscure.
Yeah, absolutely right. I'll let you throw in one more.
Who might be a really prominent player from the time that I think enough time has passed, and he's now an Imagine Dragons? Daisuke Matsuzaka.
Wow. Sure, that sounds like another fireworks stand name. Give me some Daisuke.
You mean to tell me you ain't got no Daisuke? No.
You don't got any Matsuzaka?
Matsuzaka do, Matsuzaka don't.
Darren, it's good to hear from you, man. Thanks for doing this.
Likewise. I'll see you guys later.
All right, that's Darren. Every week we screw around, talk about baseball.
You wanted to hear some great sports talk? Well, here it is.
Oh, what an appallingly ironic outcome.
The Drive with Josh Graham.
It's not ironic. It's just coincidental.
On Sports Hub Triad.
I've said it many times. There's no introductory clause that will perk the ears of sports fans up more than Adam Schefter tweeted, fill in the rest of the blank. Well, he just posted on Twitter a Tua update where apparently an ESPN reporter spoke with Dr. Thomas Bird, who's a hip specialist in Nashville. He was the independent evaluator of Tua and his medical recheck. And Stephanie Bell reports three things struck me in my conversation with Bird. Number one, his x-rays looked, quote, pristine. Two, CAT scan of right hip mirrors his left hip. So both of those seem to be right. And number three, quote, it looks as good as he's ever seen in the 5 month out from a similar injury to this. So you knew that there was going to be some information being pushed out here right before the draft. It always seems to happen. And there it is on the Tua front. It just seems like to me that the Miami Dolphins or somebody's going to make a mistake here and pass on the guy for Justin Herbert. But we're now being joined by Adam Gold, our early afternoon host. I know you've been spending a lot of time on the draft as well. Mistakes, they happen every single year at the top of the draft. When you look at this year, what mistake do you think you could see coming from 100 miles away that might happen in the top 10 tonight?
drafting Justin Herbert today?
At any point.
At any point today.
What don't you like?
Other than the fact that he doesn't really... This, of course, is based on what I've read. And I don't know if his hips are good or not. He's a good dancer, as far as I could tell. And I'm not a professional evaluator of quarterbacks. But everybody that I have talked to has basically said, I mean, he's got a big arm, and he's tall, and he's a good athlete, but he's really not even as good as Josh Allen was. And Allen was probably a reach, just has physical gifts. But he doesn't even have that kind of an arm. I think this is what happens in every draft. We reach for quarterbacks because, if we don't have a quarterback, here's what I will promise. The team that drafts Justin Herbert, and could I be wrong? Sure. But I think numbers are on my side. The odds are on my side. The team that drafts Justin Herbert will draft a quarterback 3 years from now.
Adam Gold with us here. He's on Twitter at 8GoldFan. Listen to the Adam Gold Show, noon to 3, right here on Sports Up Triad. Okay, I have an NFL draft bingo board for people to fill out tonight, and it includes terms such as ceiling, intangibles, grinder, high motor is a part of this, and deceptively fast. Do you have a favorite draft terminology?
Deceptively fast and white wide receiver are the same, right?
Gym rat, I believe, is the best term for the white wide receiver.
That would be a coach on the field. Coach on the field and deceptively fast are the same euphemism.
In your professional opinion, who's more deceptively fast, Joe Burrow or Justin Herbert?
Burrow. Burrow's the total package. I mean, he processes things quickly. That's the thing about Justin Herbert. Justin Herbert's played in college offenses, which take reads away from you. They don't allow you to read defense, which is one of the things that you've noticed that a Baylor quarterback has never been anything other than a disaster in the NFL. Because they never have to read a defense or even call a play. Because that's what college offenses do. They eliminate one side of the field, or this receiver will be open because there aren't enough good quarterbacks in college football. So everybody's playing zone defense, and here we know this guy's going to be open. So it's much easier. But Herbert isn't even accurate with wide open receivers. And that's the thing. I mean, can you improve accuracy? Steve Logan, former ECU coach and longtime offensive guru, has told us you can only improve accuracy by so much. You either have it or you don't. That's why Cam Newton, in terms of accuracy, is essentially the same quarterback that he's always been. When his mechanics are really good, he's pretty accurate. And when his mechanics are bad, which is too often, he is wildly inaccurate. Aaron Rodgers, almost every pass Aaron Rodgers throws is exactly where it's supposed to be thrown. He has that ability. Justin Herbert doesn't have that. I don't know about Tua. If Tua is healthy, if Tua didn't hurt his hip, he would have been the second pick in the draft, maybe even the first pick, depending on who you talk to. But he would have been the second pick in the draft either.
I know there's some people probably thinking, a Baylor quarterback's never been good. What about that one season that RG3 had? But you mentioned something very important, that he wasn't really asked to read defenses. I was talking to somebody, a friend of mine, who was very close to the Redskins that year, and apparently about 1,300 of the 3,100 yards that RG3 had that season passing came from one play, where it would be some type of an RPO, he'd look right, and he would either throw the ball away or he would throw it to somebody on a drag on the right side so he wasn't rolling out to the wrong end. Like 1,300, it was charted. Of the 3,100 yards he had was on one play. They weren't asking him to do a lot. And still even then, RG3 went up to Kyle Shanahan at that time and said, hey, I want to pick up more. I want to do more. And apparently the response was, you don't know anything.
Well, that's the Baylor. That was the Baylor offense. It was never no Baylor quarterback under Art Briles, and that's who his head coach was. They were never asked to call a play. The plays were called for them they knew which the open receiver was going to be, and if that receiver wasn't open, run. That's essentially what they were told to do, and that's fine. College offenses, college coaches are not supposed to train quarterbacks for the NFL. They're supposed to win games. And that's, I got no problem with that. We have to understand that. That's why you've seen a lot of NFL offenses go to RPOs and more college-themed offenses, because this is what's coming in. So you're almost moving away from guys calling plays and reading. Forget about calling plays. No quarterback calls plays. The last one to do that was Peyton Manning. But they're almost not even asked to read defenses anymore. This is what we're going to do. As you get more advanced, then you could take that next step. It's one of the reasons we all thought Jameis Winston was going to be better as a quarterback, because he played in the pro style offense in college. He was asked to read defenses and occasionally change the play at the line of scrimmage. So he was advanced mentally. He just wasn't advanced emotionally to play in the NFL.
Speaking of Baylor, in a little over 30 minutes, I will reveal my final smock draft that we have here. My final smock draft, and then Joe Person going to join us from the Athletic, Panthers beat writer Adam Gold with us here. On the way out, though, how concerned should I be tonight? I mentioned on your show that I would dress like Joe Exotic. I'd cut my hair into a mullet for a week if Carolina doesn't pick Simmons, Kinlaw, or who am I forgetting here? Derek Brown, number 7 in the draft. They'd have to remain at 7. It has to be one of those three guys. How worried should I be going into tonight?
Brown and Kinlaw will definitely be there. Simmons might be there, but I don't see Brown or Kinlaw going ahead of that. But if those three players are sitting there at number 7, and it very well could be, because we know that three quarterbacks are going in the top 6. I mean, that's almost an absolute mortal lock. You know that the second pick is going to be Chase Young, and you're going to start seeing tackles. Will the Giants take a tackle? Probably. So if those three players are all sitting there at 7, if I were the Panthers, I would trade back.
And my hair would be safe if that happened. So they have to pick at 7. So that's I just gotta make sure that I don't look like a fool. I already sound like one. I gotta make sure I look somewhat okay here.
That is a you problem,
Adam.
As we say in the trade.
Enjoy the draft tonight. What broadcast are you gonna watch?
I'm gonna watch Game 7 of the 2006 Stanley Cup Final on Fox Sports Carolina.
It's not on OLN?
No, this is an NBC game. I have the Hurricanes minus 165 tonight.
I have a good feeling on that Justin Williams guy to get on the board later. We'll see what happens. Adam, thanks for doing this, my friend.
Word.
That is Adam Gold, our early afternoon host. Noon to 3, you could listen to him right here on Sports Hub Dryad. Coming up, I think there's a clear-cut best option for Carolina at number 7. I really do. And I'll tell you who that is next on The Drive.